Welcome, everybody, and welcome to Talking Critic, now available in rough and not so rough. I'm your host, Bob Bola Bola Mackey, and this is the Talking Simpsons Patreon's chronological exploration of The Critic. Who else is here with me today?
Henry Gilbert, and just call me the Jaws of Life.
Who else is here?
Michael Rapar is back again after our one-episode absence.
Yes, thank you for coming back, Michael. We're sorry you missed Miserable.
Me too.
It was miserable.
It was a better episode than this one.
Hopefully not for our listeners, of course. And who else is here, of course,
and
as always?
Diana Goodman, Ayúdame Santos de Optima.
And today's episode is Marty's First Date.
I like French films, pretentious, boring French films. I like French films, three tickets, s'il vous plaît.
He deserved that. And it aired on February 2nd, 1994. And as always, Henry will tell us what movies are out in theaters this week.
Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book! Buy my book!
Oh boy, Bobby! Gerard Depardieu and Catherine Hagel appear in the very off-putting father-daughter comedy My Father the Hero. Critic executive producer James L. Brooks puts out the rom-com I'll Do Anything.
Oh god.
And some jerk named Jim Carrey is playing a pet detective or something. Those are the new films in theaters this week.
That premise will never go anywhere.
No way.
Oh my god. I'll Do Anything is one of those movies that the backstory is so much more interesting than the actual movie. Mm-hmm. It was supposed to be a musical written by Prince.
Whoa.
Yep. He wrote songs and they were going to sing them. Nick Nolte was singing.
Didn't they film in any of the songs?
I believe they did.
I thought so. And they had to recut the movie to make it into a non-musical.
Wow.
That's so bizarre.
Right. I never knew that. Nick Nolte singing Prince songs?
I think it was
Nick Nolte or Albert Brooks, maybe?
Yeah, I don't know.
No, it is Nick Nolte. And also I know in it that Tracy Ullman is in it as she is suing James L. Brooks to get Simpsons money, which he won't get. And then, yes, My Father the Hero was a Gerard Depardieu film, an adaptation of a French film that he was also in, which is about a divorced father trying to reconnect with his teenage daughter, and then she plays pranks on him, including the hilarious prank of telling people at a resort that she's actually dating him and that they're not father and daughter.
That's always a classic. Yeah. I mean, do you want to see Katherine Heigl's ass in a thong at age 14? If you answered yes, you're under arrest. Please hand over all of your possessions because now you're in jail.
And yes, Ace Ventura, Pet Detective is when Jim Carrey would finally arrive after like 15 years of trying to make Jim Carrey happen on a national level.
Sequel and an animated series.
Yes.
It would be a talking butt joke later in The Critic based on this, thanks to this film.
It'd be Abe Lincoln.
Talking butt!
Duke loves base humor, as we'll soon learn in future episodes. But this episode is Marty's First Date. I do want to mention the people who wrote it, Tom Gamble and Max Pross. Friends of Al Jean and Mike Reese, old-timey TV writers, they could have been on The Simpsons. They decided to instead write for a show with Tobey Maguire, I think.
Yes.
It was a Fox show with Tobey Maguire. I totally forget what it's called, but if you listen to them in any podcast, that is their one lament of their career. It's like, we didn't want to be on The Simpsons. As most people thought, it would just be a failure. It wasn't, and they regretted it. But they've worked with Al Jean and Mike Reese a lot since.
Yeah, Gamble and Pross are good old buddies of theirs. You hear them on Simpsons commentaries because they would join The Simpsons in 1999 and have kind of been there ever since. And Gamble sounds like he's 8 million years old.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, he's maybe 60, but he sounds like this. I don't know why. You could have a throat condition, but it's a fun voice to listen to, at least, I think.
And if you've watched the Simpsons episode No Disgrace Like Home, there's the Gamble family passed by. It is a reference to them.
Which would be turned into the Flanders, the better family for the Simpsons to compare themselves to. So this episode starts, I'm noticing a lot with rewatching The Critic now, it's that it just starts with Jay singing a song for no reason.
Yeah.
So in this one, he's singing Macho Man. And I like the cut to the city, the zoom to the city, like, hey. Hey, and it's like you had to draw a new image of New York for every one of those hays until they start actually doing a camera zoom. So that's pretty good.
Yeah, this episode is like the weakest one I've watched of the six we've rewatched at this point. And I don't know, but you could tell they were already indulging in the things they liked their cast doing.
Yeah.
They're just like, well, we like gay jokes with John Lovitz and we like him singing, so let's just have him do that. And that's how they start. It's a double joke. They get him to sing a gay song.
And
in 6 weeks from now, Homer will sing Nacho Man on The Simpsons.
Oh.
So.
such lateral thinking. And I think this episode is engineered to give the show more heart, as a little Deb will do ya is. They want to give the show – make it less cynical by giving Jay a nicer relationship with his family than he has with anyone else in the entire show who seems to hate him. But his family loves him.
There's always still problems anyway. Yeah,
that is true.
They're saying terrible things to him. You know he loves them.
Every person hates Jay.
I guess we can pick up with one of many alimony jokes where Jay goes to pick up Marty at Alimony Towers where Ardith lives, his ex-wife. And we hear a little bit about how Ardith met Jay. It's kind of horrifying.
Come on, Dad. We're going to be late for career day.
I had a career once, but I threw it away for you. I can't believe I fell in love with a man whose face I've never seen. And whose voice I've never heard.
Take off the bandages.
Happy? It's one of the best screams I've ever heard on TV.
It's gut-wrenching, and it cuts to her just screaming through the window as they're driving away, which is great. They get them out of the apartment that way.
Brenda Vaccaro is really underrated as the voice of Ardith.
Okay, wait, she's in Sopranos or something, right? Or am I thinking of someone else?
I believe so. No, maybe not.
She might have popped up. But about everyone did. Yeah, when we were watching this the other night, Michael asked, like, is this a reference to a specific classic movie? And I can't put my finger on what it is. There have been melodramas where someone gets in an accident or they get plastic surgery and they look like somebody else and like they fall in love while their face is wrapped up. I feel like I've seen that movie. I cannot give you a title though.
There's been a million movies like that. I mean, that also is a entire Twilight Zone episode of waiting for their bandages to be removed.
But all right.
And also in Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, they actually had a plot of the reverse of that this season, which really was just because David Cross couldn't do the show anymore. And it's like, you get 10 minutes with me and I'm out of here. That joke with Ardith, I have to say, does not gel with the continuity within the show. Because clearly, like, one, Jay has hair in flashbacks with her, but when they remove the bandages, his hair is normal rate. But, like, just in the last episode in the newlywed game, he has hair. He has his hair, so obviously that doesn't gel time.
Maybe the injury that put him in that cast also removed some of his hair, though.
Yeah,
or maybe he got hair plugs afterward and they just didn't take.
Yes. I love that fisheye visual of Jay. That's then the exact same when the door
that's
opens.
Right.
Too. He's so hideous.
It's a great drawing. I love the hideous Jay drawings.
Oh, I'd also hate for my copper tone girl knowledge to be wasted. So I did the research. They mock Jay by having his head put on top of the copper tone girl, which is a classic ad campaign that got phased out in the 90s because people finally realized like it's kind of a creepy image to stare at this girl's butt, this eight like 4-year old girl's butt.
The Simpsons would address that. I think Homer called it a gray area.
Yes,
it's kind of a gray area.
Though. The Copper Tone's original mascot was a Native American, and the motto was, "Don't be a pale face."
Oh, I get a Copper Tone. That's not offensive at all.
No, so I don't know. Maybe they actually improved on it.
I think we just found a new name for the Washington football team.
The Copper Tones.
There you go.
It's not quite a slur. That's true. So there's a few other scenes. I mean, the problem with talking about the critic and finding clips for the critic is that every scene lasts like 3 seconds. It's so fast-paced.
Yes.
So there's a flashback to Jay at his time at the New York Academy of the Performing Arts as a kid. He's being beaten up.
As seen in Fame.
Yes.
It even says it over the door.
That, I hate that they telegraph it so much. They're like, you can count on that. We'll know it's Fame. Like,
yeah,
you shouldn't
I mean,
have
they
to
use,
put that on
They
there.
Use Fame-ish music on there,
yes.
too. So, yeah, Jay is beaten up by performing art students and stuff like that. So, it's funny.
Kicked by ballerinas.
Yeah.
In the balls.
I feel like they needed to go straight to the ball kick, and instead they just, like, pass him between a couple of ballerinas and he gets kicked like a dozen times.
I bet they could only get one ball kick for the censors. Just like I expected it to be all ball kicks.
They had to cut away at the ball kick.
Yeah, you're right.
His reaction.
We're talking about the ballerinas playing the Nutcracker suite by kicking Jay. The last kick is in the nuts, but we don't see it because it's 1994 and it's ABC. That's too filthy.
Certainly not. And
this
then
is
they,
a family network.
And then they get to the UN school, which is Marty's school and is the home of a million jokes there. Though
is that the first time they established that Marty goes to the UN?
Yep. It is. Yeah, we only see Marty in the first episode. Was he in Miserable at all?
I don't think so.
Yeah, you think he would be concerned his dad was missing?
It's weird that the Easter Island kids aren't there, though. I'm used to that. And then there's a Sally Struthers fat joke, which is like, ugh, geez, how original in 1994. Yeah. Sally Struthers is fat.
Well, it's a fat joke, and it's a Christian Children's Fund joke.
Yes.
I mean, that's back in the 90s, kids, there were tons of – I mean, there's still all tons of infomercials for nonprofits that make you feel bad. You know, like Sarah McLachlan singing over really sad-looking animals. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, we had Sally Struthers, who people best knew from All in the Family, talking about, you know, raising money for, I think, Save the Children or Christian's Children's Fund or, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. These poor starving children. And the joke is she was rather overweight and she's talking about starving children.
Yeah, I mean, so, South Park will make an entire episode about this in about 3 years. And my favorite Sally Struthers joke is, do you want to make money? Sure, we all
we
do. As a daytime TV viewer in the 80s, I saw the commercial a million times, and I wanted to get my diploma in TV and VCR repair.
Yeah, how many people do you think got their diplomas in VCR repair only to regret it profoundly?
That would just throw away our TVs, Michael. Yeah. Fuck this flat screen. Who cares? Yeah, no,
I'll buy a new one. I'll get 4K. And then I swear in the first airing, that Woody Allen joke wasn't there. Like, I did not remember that joke with Woody Allen showing up. And
oh, you mean this Woody Allen joke, Henry?
Hey! Well, if it isn't my favorite neurotic Jewish New York filmmaker. Oh, hi, Jay. You're speaking at Career Day? Career Day? I thought this was the prom. Glad he's getting back to physical shtick.
He fell into a sewer. Diana, what is this from? This crazy dancing he
kinda
does?
I'm going to go with this sleeper reference.
Okay, yeah.
But I mean, it's his earlier, funnier work where, you know, he's going to play fun jazz over stuff and there's going to be wacky physical comedy.
We should say he is with Sun Yi, which is why he's like, I thought this was the prom.
It let them do a million child molestation jokes on the show. Yeah. Though did you notice that they did not call him Woody Allen? It felt like a very direct – on The Simpsons, they would have just said Woody Allen.
Woody Allen.
I feel like the producers told him, like, no, that's not Woody Allen. It's just a neurotic film critic.
They have a lot of fun with him because these were the Sun Yi years. Mm-hmm. And I think my favorite critic joke – I think it's a critic joke. He's like, what did I do to deserve this? Oh, right.
No. That is from the Simpsons Travels to Japan where he's like
– okay, you're right.
These things will drive you bananas. Ugh, what did I do to deserve this? Oh, yeah.
Man, I mean, you can't fault me for getting that joke wrong.
No.
Like, they're so similar.
There are 800 – in all these, I found all these Simpsons jokes of like, wait, that was a joke on The Simpsons or it was a joke later on The Simpsons. And the last thing I'll say about the Woody Allen stuff is like you get the sense on the commentary – John Lovitz was very insistent that they do his Woody Allen impression and not one of the – not Maurice or the other actors hired to do impressions.
Oh, that was John Lovitz. Yeah, he occasionally does do impressions on the show.
I think it really distracts from it when it's like, well, it's John Lovitz talking to John Lovitz and he basically has the same voice. It's distracting to me a little bit.
So we get is it Muammar Gaddafi as as the dictator for life guy?
I don't think we get a name, but he's basically Omar.
Yeah,
he is Omar's dad.
That's right. Mm.
And he is drawn exactly like Gaddafi, who wouldn't be – he'd keep on going until 2011.
Yeah.
And based on my research, he does not have a son named Omar though.
So. But Jay appears in class and there's a great like chain reaction joke where he insults this German artist's work.
Yes.
He jumps out the window, crushes a topiary. The landscaper sees his work destroyed. He jumps off the building, lands in concrete, and the concrete layer is just like, meh. So it's a good sense of the attitude of New York.
Well, it's not just that he insults it. It's that he destroys it.
Oh, you're right.
He erases this My giant life's work. Mural that the guy drew on the chalkboard.
It couldn't have taken him that long.
A West Berlin joke even seemed a little dated in 1994. But, I mean, that guy could have lived through that. But yeah.
So next we have Jay addressing the class at Career Day.
Maybe some of you recognize me. My show is dubbed into 11 different languages.
In Mexico, your behavior frightens us, so the station runs a disclaimer that you have escaped from a mental hospital. In my country, you bear a strange resemblance to Bombar, the god of flatulence.
Yes, it's a great job. I get to eat popcorn all day and watch movies. And with all the free stuff the studios send me, I never have to buy clothes. And I get to think of fun new ways to criticize things. For instance, you might say your teacher is wearing an ugly red dress. I'd say she's a walking blood clot.
Marty gets an F.
That teacher is so broad.
Yeah.
Well, Marty.
That was two different kids, even though it just sounded like one.
Yeah. Wasn't Tress McNeil like playing, like pinch hitting for every foreign kid in this classroom?
Tress McNeil like is overworked in all three of these next episodes. Like she is in, she's all over them.
She sounds just like Little Pepsi. You know,
yeah,
Little Pepsi.
She does sound like Peppy. Yeah. And
yeah, she sounds good. I'm kind of bummed that we never get to hear from Gorbachev's kid.
Oh, right. Gorbachev is in the class.
They both have Mikhail Gorbachev, and the little kid is just a version of him that also has a big stain, the big birthmark on his head.
They have matching birthmarks. Who would have known?
Those, I love every J promotional clothes joke. I was just cleaning up my apartment and have like a dozen t-shirts. I'm like, I bet I could sell these on eBay.
Something we can relate to. I didn't have to buy t-shirts for like 10 years.
My left foot and Tootsie were the socks Jay was wearing.
Again, it lets them do a lot of funny little jokes of like, all right, what would be a fun underwear for him to wear?
Backdraft.
Oh, for the boys. Backdraft.
Backdraft is my favorite Jay underwear that he wears. For the boys is funny, but it is another critic gay joke. So Marty bumps into this girl. We later find out she's named Carmen. A character trait is established. Her glasses are always sliding down. That will be very important later in the show, as well as Jay being, you know, referred to as crazy on Mexican television. Yeah. Those both pay off later in the
Chekhov's
show.
Chekhov's disclaimer.
Yes, exactly.
I like that Marty loves his dad so much. Like, he just is so supportive of him, even though he does feel absurd pity for his father.
Yeah. And all of Jay's advice about women is really just him projecting, and we're going to hear that many times, including now.
I think she likes you.
How can you tell?
Son, if there's one thing I know, it's how to read a woman. For example, that woman there thinks I'm disgusting, and that woman thinks I'm Bigfoot. And that woman is wondering if she should call the cops to have me thrown out of the school.
I don't think it's a man. I think it's a bear that likes key lime pie.
Well, we don't have much time, son. You better ask that girl out.
So, like, all of Jay's advice to Marty is just about him. It doesn't really apply to Marty at all.
That he's so used to being disgusting and that people have thought he's a bear. He's like, well, I know how much time we got. The cops will be here soon.
Yep, I know. 16th Precinct is 14 blocks away. Traffic at this time of day is, you got 6 minutes.
And we haven't yet choked on the vomit of our capitalist exit yet. But
it's going to happen.
Give it another decade. We're going to get there.
Yeah, Marty can't find a lot in common with Carmen because she hates America, and all Marty can tell her is an embarrassing story about how he got a mousetrap caught on his nose and almost choked on a scented candle on his birthday. Like, of all the stories to pull out of your brain, Marty, not a great one.
Feel a lot for Marty as a kid who just like putting your foot in your mouth around somebody you like. It's easy.
Yeah.
And though that was such a reworked mouth movement thing, and the show in general, critic, it really is Gene and Reese doing so much of the stuff they did on The Simpsons, like Treehouse of Horror with King Homer in it. Treehouse of Horror 3 has so many reworked mouth movements from Gene and Reese, and I think this just had them keep doing it.
The clip shows especially are just like puppet acts with reused animation. They're so hard to watch. We're going to cover them, of course, because there are two of them.
Two clip shows out of 23 episodes.
So
two
sad.
Clip shows.
So there is an international food fight which starts, and of course the French students surrender. There are some cute jokes like the Japanese students throwing the food with chopsticks, and just like very very broad ethnic humor. Of course, it's a very Borscht Belt kind of thing.
The idea that vaudeville. We'll be safe once we get to the Swiss table.
Mm-hmm. Like, yes,
that's cute.
And you've got Israel versus Libya, which I feel like it'd be a different country than Libya now in that joke. And then, but who is the country throwing the kebabs? I couldn't really tell.
I wasn't sure.
Yeah,
I wasn't really sure.
I cannot place them,
but. Marty wins over Carmen by showing off his talent of catching food in the air, and he saves her life.
Oh, no! Incoming sausage! That was amazing. I practiced that with my dad. Now follow me. We'll be safe once we reach the Swiss table. You're very brave. My name is Carmen.
Give me your French fries. Give me your pot pies. I'll take your large size saucer ice cream. Delicious.
Dad, I got a date.
Ah, that's great.
Sir, some kids are trapped under a side of beef.
Just call me the Jaws of Life.
So Jay's going to eat a lot of food.
Very reworked mouths there, too.
Yeah, the Jaws of Lifeline was an ADR thing.
I'm not even going to touch the implications of Marty practicing catching sausages with his
dick. Oh, yeah. I mean, I think the catching the sausage was a little bit of a dirty joke. Mm. I mean, of all the funny foods to catch in your mouth, they chose sausage, yeah. I think, for a reason.
But also, like, he didn't have to, like, move to catch it. It just sort of landed in his open mouth.
He has the power to attract sausages as well, I think.
Yeah. And I mean, the whole thing is sort of like a fat loser joke, though. The idea that they're throwing sausages at each other on their father-son weekends.
Yes.
That's their idea of a good time.
And that's funny.
I know I've said that delicious before. It's just so great that
I want to know how big that side of beef was if kids are trapped under it.
Yeah. See, again, that
how
joke
did that
doesn't
happen?
Work.
What now, why is it in the cafeteria?
Yeah.
Yeah. Whatever the original joke was before, I wish they'd stuck with it.
They had
that.
To go into the freezer to get more food. So up next, we get one of three scenes of people's first dates. I didn't capture the clip, but Jay's first date was at prom in 1976, but he collapsed because he had kidney stones.
Hey, wait a minute. In the very next episode, his prom photo is with a nun.
That's
hey.
True.
But so he's
maybe one was junior prom and the other was senior prom.
Yeah, he could have had two proms.
Maybe. Well, I took this as senior prom because it said class of 76, so I just assumed.
But he was 16, so he wouldn't have been a senior.
Okay. Yeah,
all right.
Unless he skipped.
So, I do like, hear that, Sally? I'm very mature.
And if he's in the class of 76, that makes him 2 years older than Marge and Homer, who were part of the class of 74.
Ooh. Yes, one cute little scene is Jay combing Marty's jufro with a black power hairpin.
That was very cute. Yeah.
I appreciated that much more now rewatching it.
They could have driven home the free stuff joke by making it a Malcolm X pick.
That is true.
Yeah, they only got room for one Malcolm X joke in this episode.
They missed their chance.
And you know, Marty's a pretty good batter if he can hit a ball all the way into the Cathedral of St. John the Divine in Central Park.
I wasn't sure. I thought that was St. Patrick's. And there are so many cathedrals that look similar to that in New York. I couldn't place it.
I am saying it's St. John the Divine because it is next to Central Park, and they were clearly playing in Central Park. So that's what I'm going to say. But New Yorkers, you correct me.
Yeah, I mean, if there's a scene in The Critic and they're not around buildings, they're in Central Park because it's one of two locations. So up next, we have Jay explaining women to Marty. This is where he really starts projecting.
This episode of women, man.
Yeah.
This is my favorite.
Maybe Al Jean and Mike Reese are projecting. Who knows? Mm. But let's hear him.
Now, son, one last thing I want to tell you about women. They're different from us. They're soft and curvy and well, maybe they're not that different. Except in this one way. They can smell fear. Once they've got their claws in you, there is no end to the horrors they can inflict. I'm scared, son. Let's just stay home and watch a video. Don't leave your papa. Don't leave your papa.
It's okay, Dad.
Don't leave your papa.
It's some great big acting by Lovitz there. I like that a lot.
Yeah.
And that Jay's head has definitely gotten less angular already in this one. Like, it's more of a pumpkin or a pear, I'd say, than...
I think the pilot was really just the flattest head Jay, the flattest head, the smallest eyes, the most David Silver mini Jay we've seen so far.
The Critic will be right back, you TV-addicted couch monkeys.
Watch my new show, The Critic, from the producers of The Simpsons. Only this time, they're sober. Ugh.
The Critic, coming soon.
So Jay drives Carmen to Miguel Garcia's residence.
Mm-hmm.
He's the ambassador for Cuba, right?
Yeah. First, I read him as Carmen's father, but he's not related.
Oh.
He's not Castro's son.
Okay,
so.
I wasn't sure about the familial connections.
He might be Castro's son-in-law. You know?
Yeah, right, it could be.
I could just see him, or I could also see Castro sending his granddaughter to America and living with his most trusted diplomats.
That could be. Mm-hmm. So Miguel Garcia, I think he gives Jay flowers and Jay gives him a Star Trek 7 pen, but Star Trek 7 does not exist. That would be Generations.
That pisses me off, that joke. I really didn't like that. Yeah. They could have easily done a Star Trek 3 pen or a Star Trek 5 pen.
I think they just assumed there would be a Star Trek 7.
And that it would be directed by Nimoy. Yeah. So Star Trek 7, Nimoy's lamest.
Nimoy is not a bad director. He directed Three Men and a Baby, the biggest movie of 1987.
Yep.
He was a really good director. Like, I'm glad they didn't just go back to Shatner again, though, of just saying, like,
yeah, it's easy. Too easy.
And he gave him a Cubano cigar. He did not give him flowers.
Yeah. So we get another trip to Lane. Is it Lane Riche?
Yeah.
Is that how you say it?
Lane Riche.
Lane Riche.
Yeah.
And
rich ass.
Just a cute scene of Lada does not know why children would be present at a restaurant outside of child labor.
Yeah.
So dark.
It paints Vlada in a very different light, that he has child slaves who work for him. And that he looks so weird next to every other character. It's like, you're an alien. Yeah. I love his design.
It's great. Actually, after watching a lot of Duckman and doing Talking Duckman, I'm like, you're a Duckman character. Just the way you look. Your face never changes, even if your body rotates. It's just like this one face in the middle of your giant head.
It's very hard to draw from different angles, I would imagine. Like,
yeah. Mm. And I do like that they don't give him an actual country he's from. He's just like a melange of what, Eastern European?
He's very Eastern European.
Mr. Sherman. I love him. He's great.
And then Jeremy shows up and we get some like a Che Guevara variation on Crocodile Gandhi.
A day in the life of Che Guevara.
But the worst joke again of just like reworked mouth movements was that, like, Evita Perón? That's right. And Mrs. Doubtfire himself, Robin Williams.
And it's
just Maurice doing like
a good impression.
It's good, but it's like just throwaway words.
Actually reminds me a deep cut of the scene in The Simpsons of Cape Fear where Grandpa's talking about he can eat corn on the cob if you mush it up into a fine paste. Now that's good eating. It's like three mouth movements just frozen on him. And this reminds me of that exactly, the same kind of thing. It's just like, I'm not buying this.
I mean, that was Gene and Reese's last Simpsons. And so I think it did teach them the bad lesson of, if we just have like 3 seconds of mouth movements, they can say anything.
It's so convincing.
It's so convincing.
I wonder if they initially meant to animate a cutaway there and they're like, we don't have time. Just have them say
Could be, yeah. Or they just rewrote the joke at the last second. But Jay and Carmen and Marty go to see a movie and they pan Family Feud the movie and MASH the movie of the TV show, not the original movie. But then they see a movie that we should all know, The Red Balloon. And Jay is very, very excited about it, as we heard earlier in this podcast.
Dad, what about this one?
A foreign film. Oh, the evening is saved. I like French films, pretentious, boring French films. I like French films. 3 tickets, s'il vous plaît.
Ow. So, yeah, this guy will, I mean, The Critic is very much about the rule of threes in comedy. Mm. So we'll see 3 flashbacks to 3 first dates. This guy will appear 3 times to punch Jay in the face after he's an asshole or he's acting out in public. But yeah, they go see The Red Balloon.
First off, can you believe there's never been a MASH reboot yet? There hasn't been one.
Yeah.
Bite your tongue.
I'm happy there's no MASH reboot.
And that guy punching Jay in the face is another Simpson-y joke. That's the exact moment happens in Mr. Plow when the guy says, you know those commercials, those two people with annoying voices yelling at each other? I wrote those. Punch.
Yeah, get it all the time.
Yeah, get it all the time.
I didn't get clips of the trailers that they play, but they're pretty good. There's a nice scene before this where Jay is like playing klezmer music through a box of candy, and there's a rabbi clapping in the background. it's really good. It doesn't work in audio.
It's weird that it'll take 4 more episodes before they can confirm his Judaism in his trip to the orphanage, and he asks, am I Jewish? What do you think?
Yeah, but obviously Hava Nagila is where you got to go if you got a box of Junior Mints and you want to make it sing.
and then they see a very ish joke of Malcolm F or of just F, and it's about Malcolm Forbes, and it's cute, the reversal of it, but I don't get why it was rated PC because
politically correct.
I mean, politically correct.
I think in this era, politically correct meant like we won't talk about these things that make people uncomfortable. We'll just ignore them or you know euphemize them.
Yeah,
I do like the Harvard guy in the eyes going bola bola.
Ah, no, that is a Yale joke.
Oh, a Yale joke. Damn.
Bula bula is what Yaleys say. And so this was a bunch of Harvard jerks making fun of Yale jerks.
I do love the Plymouth Rock didn't land on us. We landed on Plymouth Rock.
In case you don't know, Malcolm Forbes is a guy who started Forbes magazine and is an ultra-capitalist, which really should have pissed Carmen off of having to see that.
Who'd been dead for only 4 years at this point.
Mm-hmm. And his idiot son ran for president, one of the least phonogenic presidential nominees of all time. He hosted one of the worst episodes of SNL.
With Rage Against the Machine on it.
And was Rage Against the Machine banned from the show after that because they hung an American flag upside down?
Yep. Yeah, okay, they pissed off Lauren. Boy, I was hoping when another presidential candidate was on there that it would have been a repeat of Forbes, but it was not.
Yeah.
I love the super dark joke about Clippy, the film strip. But it's so visual, there's no reason
it's so dark, it felt kind of – I mean, I like the joke, but it felt out of place that like no one reacted to it. There was just like silence after it ended. It's like, Daddy, where did you go?
Well, that's a joke that I didn't really appreciate until much later because – the movie theater chains that I saw stuff like around this time didn't have that sort of preview thing where like little film strip comes out and does a little dance or like the soda is alive or whatever.
You're on the candy roller coaster.
Right. And then when I moved to San Francisco and I ended up with different film chains and it had one that's like, yeah, the little film strip comes out and he's going to like telling you to be quiet because the movie's coming. And all I could think about is him going to be pulled into that projector and then his children coming out and going, Daddy. Where are you, Daddy?
So great that they not only show you – it's dark enough to show him die, but just to let you know, like, he's leaving children behind.
Yeah, it's actually Kath Susie doing the voice who does Phil and Lil on Rugrats. So it's like hearing a Rugrat mourn their parents' death.
And that is based on the official AMC Theaters mascot, Clip.
Yep.
Who was the dancing film strip, though. It was just that every limb of him was film strip, and he had a film strip head. He was like a stick figure, but all film strip. I knew that because I worked at AMC Theaters at the time, and that's when I learned his name, Clip, in like the new employee thing. They're like, and get to know Clip, the mascot of AMC. Though he hasn't been the mascot since 2009.
I don't remember him at all. Turns out they actually went to see the Red Balloon Part 2, Revenge of the Balloon. And I'm sorry, I should have gotten the clip because there's a great Alan Rickman and Steven Seagal. It's like, I don't know who's more full of hot air, you or the balloon.
I love the general going like,
so great because, I mean, I don't know if we mentioned that, the original Red Balloon is a French film that's just sort of sweet and adorable and kind, and you know, kids watch it, and about a kid in his balloon, and they wander around, and they go on an adventure.
One more step, and the red balloon becomes the dead balloon.
But it's also a kind of callback because it's sort of a traumatic movie. Because spoilers, the balloon gets shot by a slingshot and dies.
No,
is that the moral?
No, and then like it's sad, and then like all the balloons from the city come to the little boy.
Obviously, I've never seen this movie. I should.
And though Jay should like ask for his money back, or whatever, because that poster was clearly for the first Red Balloon, not the sequel. Like he was lied to.
Yeah.
And the Red Balloon actually did get a spiritual sequel from the same director called, in English, Still Away in the Skies.
Neat.
Which is about a giant hot air balloon, and also the same boy who's the son of the director is in it as well.
Okay. Yeah, you go bigger with the sequel. Hot air balloon this time. So Jay has to give Marty some advice. Carmen is getting very bored at this movie.
I love this
advice. And again, more of Jay's insecurities leak out.
Son, you're losing her. Repeat after me. I really like you.
I really like you.
You're not like the other girls.
You're not like the other girls.
You can see beneath these layers of bitterness and self-loathing to my proverbial achy breaky heart.
Huh?
Ow.
Second punch. I think I do have
That was the third punch.
Oh, that was the third punch? The second punch was the klezmer music, right?
Yeah.
I thought so.
No, he gets punched twice in line and then once there. So, but just his self-loathing and cynicism. Yeah. Just like, Marty doesn't need to hear about that, Jay.
So, unfortunately, after the movie, Mugger robs Jay. Not much is really more made of that.
It doesn't matter that he lost his car. In no way does it matter he got his car stolen.
Why did they drive to the theater, though?
That's true. It is New York. These are LA people writing a New York show, so they don't get it. Yeah. It's like when Seinfeld, when they're talking about driving places, you're like, what are you talking about? You don't drive a lot in New York.
But I did like the little gag about the thief asking for the keys. Like, the keys won't do you any good without the car.
That was funny. I guess it adds more to why Carmen is mad, because they had to walk home from there because the car was stolen, though. Then it's just like, you just got a cab. Like, you didn't walk home.
You're in New York, you're in Manhattan. you can get anywhere within 5 minutes using the subway.
Yeah.
Yeah. Though, of course, it is a traumatic incident to be mugged, so that probably didn't make Carmen in a particularly good mood either.
Jay has a pretty nice car. I mean, it's a convertible. Yeah. I think maybe he used that car to impress Carmen or have like make Marty look better maybe. So Marty is crestfallen after this. Carmen obviously hated the date, and Jay gives him more advice that's really about him and his horrible life.
What a lousy date. Carmen must hate me.
Listen, son. Women don't always go for the guy with the best body or the nicest smile.
Oh, Dirk, you have such beautiful pecs and teeth.
Oh, will you shut up? Son, what women admire most in a man is persistence. No matter what, don't give up.
What should I do?
Get her a special gift. Something she really needs, but doesn't know she needs.
Weather stripping. And I've been losing 40% of my heat through corner seals and molding. Come here, you practical boy.
That's a gift for Marge Simpson.
Marge wanted to get double-ply windows in the Stampy episode. It's a similar joke. Both of those jokes feel like the jokes of the recent homeowner, like these people who don't live in apartments anymore.
Oh, my God. How many – I had to do some serious weather stripping around the house. And every time I have to do it, every time I have to go buy it, I think, weather stripping.
Well, I want to ask Diana, you're the only woman in the room.
Yes.
How do you feel about Jay's advice to be persistent if you're pursuing a woman, especially if she seems very disinterested in you?
After a date, you are uninterested, then – the persistence maybe should be turned off, perhaps?
Yeah, I feel like you hear no twice. How about that? I mean, a follow-up to like, I'm sorry that date was so bad. You know, I really apologize. You know, can I make it up to you? Do you want to go get whatever a child equivalent is of coffee is? Ice cream, I guess. I don't know. Something that's simpler, maybe. Like, bring it down so there's less opportunity for failure. And after that second note, dude, you're done.
Yeah.
Done.
Yeah.
No, 100% done.
Respect boundaries and know when you give up. You can't wear every woman down. You can't wear most women down. That's not a good way to approach dating.
That's not what every Hollywood movie ever told me.
No. Women don't have a stamina meter secretly.
No. You just keep throwing fireballs at her and that red line gets smaller and smaller and smaller.
Wait until her weak spot starts flashing and then you go on a second date.
When she's twice as big and red, then you know.
Oh, man. Wait until she gets to her third form. Then it's scary.
But Marty is persistent and goes back and does get her a thoughtful gift. I do love the line like, we're just trying to be diplomatic. We're diplomats.
Yeah.
That's a
she left
line.
Just because the date was so bad. She went all the way back to Cuba.
It's a very extreme action of Carmen's.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like they're writing her as a broads are crazy, huh?
No, I think he ruined all of America for her.
Yeah.
He's like, that was the last fucking straw.
And then we get some very pre-9/11 jokes of going through an airport.
Yeah. Like I felt it was odd. This is – okay, episode one, Jay does this with Valerie, whatever. Mm-hmm. Episode three, Marty does this with Carmen. It's like pursuing women through an airport is a very common theme in these early episodes of The Critic. I think mostly because it is a movie cliche. Mm-hmm. But it's happening a little too much for me.
And Jay and the Thought Balloon is so – I like it a lot. And the animation when the balloon pops is so good.
It's great.
Good.
Yeah.
The way it flies around the screen. Whoever animated that did a really good job. And –
then
him being stepped on is the exact joke from Cape Fear when Sideshow Bob is getting stepped on. It's my job on this show to tell everybody The Critic isn't original and they ripped off every joke from previous Simpsons jokes.
You mean Simpsons writers write similar jokes on The Critic?
I know. Can you believe
how
it?
How dare they?
Except in this place, it's clogs instead of elephants.
The clog dancing team, right? That's great. I like that.
Not the elephants.
This version of Jay can feel pain inside of the bubble. So
the cello bum's pretty funny, too.
That is funny. Yeah, it's a nice little joke where a bum picks a cello. So Marty finds a way to sneak into Carmen's luggage. He pulls a cello out and sneaks into the case. A bum picks up out of the garbage, and we see later he sold out Carnegie Hall. Like, now playing bum. Just his name is Bum, I guess. So Marty does get her a thoughtful gift, and it's not weather stripping, which Carmen probably really didn't need.
Weather stripping.
Weather stripping. Papa Homer. It's she gets him he gets her clips for her glasses. As we see throughout the episode, it's a nice little animated touch that her glasses keep slipping down her nose. Mm-hmm. They don't really call attention to it with dialogue, but it's just a character bit she does in animation. So Marty does get her those clips, and apparently the factory – in Cuba that made those shut down because of U.S. embargoes. Mm. So I guess it's connected to our relationship with Cuba in some way.
Mm. Which, hey, now we're buddies again, or are we? Yeah, we were last year.
Yeah, we're going to take backsies on that.
But there is a nice but also very time-killing scene of the pilot's glasses slipping and he has to keep riding the plane over and over again.
Why do it twice?
Yeah.
Five times.
It's a very Al Jean and Mike Reese bit where it's like, we can make this joke happen four times.
Mm. It is a very rake joke moment too, yes. Mm-hmm. Jay, I like Jay visiting his parents. They usually try to find time, even in episodes they're not in, for Jay should go home and have a scene with his parents. That'll be funny. And they get to have basically Franklin in Wacky Land.
I remember my first date. Yes. Like, you've never been more beautiful.
It was some good use of like Fleischer and Warner style animation in that.
I like the crazy smoke ring coming out of his pipe at the end as he walks with that Clarabelle cow lady. What's going on in Frank? What's wrong with Franklin? Do we know yet?
Never answered.
Is it alcohol-induced dementia? It has to be. Something like that.
Well, definitely no alcohol makes him sane and normal, as we saw in season two when they're stuck on that island.
So is it really just – yeah, he drinks himself into a stupor all the time because he's just sort of a waspy guy?
I guess so. Just he can't stand to live with himself and just drinks all the time.
Or his wife or
the
his
wife
daughter,
might be
apparently.
Quite
I mean, so we learn a bit more about Eleanor and what her problems are up in this next clip.
I guess I better call the police. Aren't you the least bit worried?
Worry is an emotion, and showing emotion has been genetically bred out of us. But you can rest assured that deep down, I'm crying like a coal miner's widow. Sugar cookie?
Wait, there's Morty on the TV.
Oh, my God.
Just reach in the TV and pull him out. That's how I met the Fonz.
It's Marty's name wrong. His own grandson.
The joke – so we're pointing out similar jokes. That reminds me of Lisa's Ponies. Like, despite my pretentious facade, I can assure you my heart is breaking. Well, the unnamed owner of the gelding stables or whatever. Yeah, the galloping gelding. I forget what it's called.
Both her and Eleanor are Katharine Hepburn types.
Yes. Yeah. So. Actually, it's the Grateful Gelding.
That's right. Yeah. It's even creepier.
Yeah.
And Eleanor, I love her so much. How mean and heartless she is. And
next episode, we'll really learn all about that.
And also, we find out that in Cuba, they basically have the Today Show starring the same people.
But they're just darker.
Yes.
It's like a toilet paper now available in rough and not so rough.
And I like the clever thing of Uncle Sam and Auntie America.
Yeah.
Shouldn't she be Tia Americana?
The joke is anti-America.
I get it. Yes, I know.
Why are they speaking English?
But Auntie America
is funny.
It is the Uncle Sam on stilts, which is the classic parade guy.
Who will also be in the next episode, too.
That's true. So Jay's advice-giving head appears again to annoy Marty, but at least he gets a better ending with this appearance.
I love this one.
Kiss her, son. Kiss her, or you'll regret it the rest of your life. Don't grow old like me, a fat, whiny head with three hairs. Nobody loves me. And this bubble is beginning to smell. Hello? Hello? Advice-giving head here. Ooh, fried bananas.
That is not actually music from Pac-Man, so thank you, Alf Clausen. That's a really great sound alike. I mean,
really sounds like
the tinny, echoey, like old arcade hardware. You can really hear it. So that was a great little reference. Yeah. I like that a lot.
And you saying like, why aren't they speaking Spanish? Just suddenly reminded me the pilot when his glasses are falling down.
Yeah,
what he says is translated as "Help me, patron saints of eye care or
eyewear."
Eyewear. Yeah. But what he says is "Ayúdame, Santa Miopia." So Saint Myopia.
Saint Myopia. Yeah. Oh, nice.
I caught that myopia. I was like, I don't think that's the word for eyewear in Spanish.
So, help me, saint nearsightedness.
Yeah.
That's but a Pac-Man joke wasn't entirely new back then, but I still remember going like, wow, a video game reference in a comedy. That's amazing.
I appreciated it.
And now I can't, like, I'm sick of it. I'm
you
like,
can't
enough
get away
video
from
games. Yes. Adam Sandler made a whole goddamn movie about it.
Donkey Kong.
This was a 60 Minutes profile on Osama bin Laden. Why is there a game reference?
So, Jake, I don't get this reference. I know who this is, but Jake goes to the Linda Ronstadt International Airport in Mexico.
Yes. Linda Ronstadt is of Mexican heritage.
Oh, I didn't know that. You can't tell by her name.
Well, she has multiple. It's like German and Mexican is in there. But she's done tons. She did tons of albums in Spanish.
Yeah, that came into the Mr. Plow episode. Yes.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, duh. I should remember that.
So, but she is not Mexican. Like, she was born in America.
Well, she had that album, Canciones de mi Padre, Songs of My Father.
Which was a huge hit in the early 90s.
I apparently know nothing of Linda Ronstadt. Forgive my giant ignorance. It's filling the room right now.
And then we get that callback to the crazy Mexican stories about him.
Ah, yes.
Yeah, someone notices him as the escape mental patient that they warn people about in Mexico. But
loco de televisión!
We always – like this show always cuts to the end of a Jay Sherman bit where he's saying the worst thing possible. It's like, and that's why I'm glad the Beatles broke up. And but this one, it's like – and that's why Ned Beatty is the world's greatest actor. I think Ned Beatty's a great actor. Like,
Beatty is a legitimately great actor.
That scene in Network, he won an Oscar for that, just that scene alone.
Just nominated
You have meddled with the forces of nature.
Yeah, well also in Network, like the woman who played the wife, she won an Oscar for a 5-minute scene.
It's still the shortest performance ever. Yeah.
That scene is just what's his face leaving her, right? That's the only scene she's in. Yeah.
And I love that because she's just like, oh, I'm sorry. William Holden. She's like, I'm glad you get to have your little adventure and find your youth. I'll just be here being the poor wife. Yeah. Ned Beatty is a good actor. There's so many other words they could have put in there for him to be a snob about and say is the best actor. I feel like he would have said like a French person, like even Gerard Depardieu, he could have said that and they'd have thought he was crazy.
Yeah, but whatever. Anyway.
And then Castro enters the story, which can you believe he lived 22 more years after this episode aired?
We do hear about his first date, this is the one date I did capture. It's the most dialogue heavy date.
This is very funny.
Yeah.
I remember my first date.
Oh, Fidel, why don't you stay here in Washington? You could play pro ball for the Senators while we both do volunteer work for Eisenhower.
First, let's pet. It's the 50s.
Ow! You have got to shave.
Never! I am proud of my Cuban whiskers.
Hey, the lady said to leave her alone.
Your country will regret this someday.
How am I supposed to get home?
I'll give you a lift.
No!
It's my 5 o'clock shadow, isn't it?
I mean, you should be able to tell who those people are, but it's JFK and Richard Nixon, obviously, all interacting together in the 50s.
It kind of reminds me of the Fantastic Four origin comics where Ben Grimm, Reed Richards, and Dr. Doom all go to the same college. And it feels the same.
Fidel Castro's kind of a jerk for just shoving that woman out of his car.
Yep.
Well, also, shove her pretty far, too.
Let's talk about how this is his first date and he's got a full beard.
That's right.
Wait a minute.
Fancy car.
It's my 5 o'clock shadow, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that. I believe that is true, though, that he did try out – was going to – or he tried out to play pro ball in the U.S. to play baseball.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
And Nixon – there's going to be some Nixon jokes coming up. He would only live a few more months. He dies in April of 94.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And so we're in February, just 2 more months to Nixon.
I'm not dead yet. So
it's kind of cruel to say Mexico ships mental patients off to sea. That's kind of a mean show. Yeah.
Apparently the SS Loco is very, very – it's better than a cruise ship apparently.
Yes. It's way better than the Carnival cruise ship.
Yeah. This episode is coming to a close and Marty and Carmen are on the beach and there's going to be a lot of sound effects and stuff in this clip, but I can assure you they do kiss.
Can I kiss you goodbye? You're not supposed to ask. You're supposed to just do it. Do what? You should spin me around in your arms, take me by surprise, and kiss me. Would it be all right if I did that now? No.
They are kissing, I can assure you. And I can immediately play the next clip because this is Jay pulling up on the SS Loco with his new wife.
He had to get married to a Mexican citizen to go to Cuba.
And yet another alimony joke is on the way, so
Holy
get ready.
Holy shit, yeah.
What are you doing here?
I came to pick you up. This is your new mother.
I plan to divorce him and take half his money.
She's a lot like your old mother.
Well, Carmen, I guess I better go home. I'll always remember our first date. Adios, Marty.
Adios.
Whoa.
I am an old man, but I can still learn a thing or two. Children don't believe in bigotry and hatred. They don't divide the world into communist and capitalist. Maybe it's time I...
Hey, who died made you El Presidente?
Dad, that's Castro.
Don't worry. I am not the gruff bear they say I am.
And then Jay's immediately put in front of a wounding squad.
Shoot to wound.
And
but he gets out of it because he gave thumbs up to the Mambo Kings.
Hooray! Which, I looked that up. The Mambo Kings is about people who had fled Cuba. So wouldn't people who are still in Cuba be not like that thing?
Yeah, at least, but it's a very Cuban-heavy movie. I mean, yes, it's better than like if you said Scarface? Everyone would throw up.
Well,
be like, how dare you?
I'm just saying that the guys, soldiers in front of Castro trying to impress him, would not cheer a movie about people who left Cuba under his rule.
But it's got lots of Cuban music, and this was before Buena Vista Social Club, so it was the best thing you could go to.
It was the one Cuban movie that Tom Gamble and Max Prost knew.
Yeah. I also feel like in an original draft, Jay does get shot over the black, and then instead they're like, no, let's not have him get shot. It's too dark.
It is too dark.
Can I weigh in on one more thing as a woman? Asking if you can kiss someone, I find incredibly romantic.
Oh.
I do think that that's a fun thing.
Are you saying Jay Sherman's advice is bad?
I know.
And he's
right?
not a role model?
But well, also Carmen's advice was bad.
It was, yeah. I mean, these are like middle-aged men writing women. So,
writing a 14-year-old girl's words and her opinions on when to kiss somebody. I mean, yeah, that's the thing you see in a lot of movies. Just like, oh, come on. Oh, you ruined the moment by asking to kiss me. You should have just done it.
No, I find that super romantic.
Mm-hmm.
That you respect someone's boundaries and,
Also you're being honest. You're saying what's on your mind in a way – and it could be really embarrassing. You're putting yourself out there. That's part of the whole thing. Like, oh.
Yeah, it's like also maybe
– I'm just like, oh.
Maybe the woman is not ready because maybe she's got something in her teeth or is about to burp. Like, you want to clear the runway first. You know? I think it's good for everybody. But, it's an okay episode of The Critic. I mean, it's just kind of all over the place. But I don't think there are really any bad episodes outside of the clip shows. I don't know. How do you guys feel about Marty's First Date?
I think it's aggressively cute at
points. It really
is,
yeah.
Which I don't particularly like. I think it is very weird that in a 48-hour period – Jay is breathing the same air as Castro, Gaddafi, and Gorbachev. Like, it's kind of weird when you think about it. And it's a bit all over the place. And I wish they'd calm down on the rewriting lines. It's like, you guys just have a little more faith in your text, you know?
Yeah.
But there are funny bits in there, but I just don't like the cutesy stuff. What Marty-centric episodes are not always my favorite.
Yeah. Have everybody else, what do you think?
I don't think the episode overall has aged particularly well.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely the weakest critic episode that I've seen so far. Mm. It's all right, but I do kind of feel like they were trying a little bit hard to soften Jay through the presence of Marty, and they do try that a little bit to, I think, better effect in later episodes.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of The Critic that's explicitly and implicitly trying to make Jay more likable, like within the narrative of the show itself, and the writers actually doing things in the writing to make Jay a better character or not as repulsive as he is to everyone else in the world around him.
I like it more when they lean into his repulsiveness. I like that.
Yeah. Well, they will redesign him to make him cuter, but he's still Jay Sherman ultimately. Diana.
I agree. This is one of the weaker episodes, I think, of the series, honestly. But, you know, I mean, we're only at the third episode. We're still finding our legs, and we're dedicating pretty much a whole episode to a side character who doesn't get much time. But he's very cute, and it's a fun way to, you know, explore people's scary romantic feelings and looking back on their shitty first dates and stuff like that.
And
so,
I love Chris, even
a weak episode of The Critic is still really good.
I agree. And I love the late Christine Cavanaugh's voice. She's got a voice like no one else's. She plays Marty.
Yeah.
She played Babe the Pig. She played Chucky in Rugrats, Gosling in Darkwing Duck. She was all over the
90s. Dexter in Dexter's Laboratory.
Yeah, passed away a few years ago. I think she had an illness she didn't want to go public with, or who knows what happened to her. But
R.I.P.
Yeah. But that was Talking Critics. Hard to leave on a down note. I've been your host, Bob Mackey. You can find me on Twitter as Bob Servo. My other podcast is Retronauts. Find find that every Monday at Retronauts.com or look for Retronauts in your podcast machine. I mean, you give us money if you're listening to this. You know who I am. You know what Retronauts is. Thank you so much for giving to us. We're doing this all because of you. And Henry, if you want to talk more about that.
Yeah, no, I want to thank all you lovely patrons again who came and supported us so we could do this and hit that goal so fast for doing Talking Critic. I want to hit all our goals and obviously – and just – I want to record a podcast about every cartoon ever, honestly. Like, and but I – at the very least, being a Simpsons and then critic historian is something I'm loving doing. So thank you very much, all you wonderful Patreon listeners. But also, Diana and Michael have tons of cool stuff they want to tell you about.
Sure. I could tell you about 302010 is a show I do every single week. We look back on that particular week in pop culture history. From 1987, 1997, 2007. It's been a big summer already. We're hitting good stuff. We got Predators. We got Terminators. We got all kinds of stuffs and things. And Michael?
I like both of those.
Yeah, I do a weekly podcast called Video Game Apocalypse that usually goes up on Fridays. It's about video games. We start off with the top five, then go into talking about new releases, news, other things. And you can also follow me on Twitter at WikiParas, and you can follow Diana at LecineNerd.
Yep. LecineNerd.
Yep. We will be back next week with Dial M for Mother. Thank you so much for giving to us, and we'll see you then.
Excuse me, sir. The show's over.
But I have nowhere to go.